see attacks like this as a threat to the independence and impartiality of our judiciary.
A conservative group campaigns against a Superior Court judge in Anchorage. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, November 1st. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, an Anchorage lawmaker accuses outside interest groups of exploiting a loophole in Alaska's disclosure law.
They've arranged a very cute way to avoid Alaska law so that on TV, when their ads run, they don't have to say who their contributors are.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Wells Fargo, providing Alaskans steps to help reach their financial goals. Wells Fargo Bank, N.A. And by Era Alaska. For more than 30 years, Era Alaska has been transporting packages across the state, business documents, medical supplies, even family pets. More details at flyera.com or talk to your local Era Alaska agent. Era Alaska, bringing Alaskans together.
A conservative group is targeting a Superior Court judge in Anchorage who is on the ballot for retention this year. Alaska Family Action is campaigning against Judge Sen Tan for decisions he made in the late 1990s on cases related to the issue of abortion. The Alaska Judicial Council is responding with an advertising campaign supporting Tan, calling him one of the highest-rated judges in the state. APRN's Annie Fite reports.
Alaska Family Action is using mostly email and the internet to campaign against Judge Tan, but the group also has a giant RV nearly completely covered with signs that say "Vote No, Judge Sen Tan," and "No Activist Judges."
We're going from Talkeetna down to Homer and everywhere in between, just parking at busy intersections and handing out information.
Jim Minnery is president of Alaska Family Action, and he's the one driving the RV with his two yellow labs as companions. He says the group is also using robocalls to get their message out, but does not have funding for radio or TV ads. They're targeting Judge Tan for two decisions he made more than a decade ago. One of the rulings was against requiring parental consent for a teenager seeking an abortion.
We think that that was egregious usurpation of his authority, that it was nothing more than a thinly disguised mandate of his own beliefs.
26 judges are up for retention across the state in this year's election, and the Alaska Judicial Council is recommending voters retain all of them. The council is in charge of providing recommendations and compiling ratings for all of Alaska's judges. Larry Cohn, executive director of the Judicial Council, says Judge Tan has some of the highest marks in the state.
Social workers and advocates for Alaska's abused and neglected children gave him a rare, perfect rating on our surveys. So our feedback from the people who are in the best position to observe Judge Tan's work rate him very highly.
In response to Alaska Family Action's campaign against Tan, the Judicial Council is running newspaper ads supporting him. Cohn estimates the council has spent a few thousand dollars on the ads, and Cohn says it's important for the council to defend judges with strong records on the bench.
We see attacks like this as a threat to the independence and impartiality of our judiciary.
Retired Alaska Judge Elaine Andrews agrees. She says that the job is not about winning a popularity contest.
The nature of the job is that on your best day, half the world's going to be mad at you because you have to rule in favor of one side of an issue and against the other.
Judge Andrews says Alaska's constitution was designed to protect judges from the divisiveness of politics, and that's why they're appointed instead of elected and then stand for retention periodically.
The expectation is you do your job carefully, you follow the law. If people don't like the decision, they appeal it. And if you interpreted the law incorrectly, you're going to get reversed. And if people who are unhappy with the judge's decision don't like the law it's based on, they go back to the legislature to try and get the law changed. I mean, that's the process. And to sort of pick people off for unpopular decisions distorts that democratic process.
But Minnery says judges can't remove themselves from politics.
Justices and judges are in a political environment, whether they admit it or not.
And he says judges make decisions every day about values in society.
It's ridiculous to say that, you know, we're bringing politics into the discussion when these judges are public servants, and they willingly place themselves in a position that allows the public to periodically scrutinize their record and cast a vote accordingly.
Minery won't say how much Alaska Family Action is spending on the campaign against Hahn. In 2010, the group waged a similar campaign against Supreme Court Justice Dana Fabe. She was retained by voters that year, but only narrowly, with 54% of the vote. Superior Court judges like Hahn stand for retention every 6 years. In Anchorage, I'm Annie Feit.
As November 6th draws near, political advertising raises its pitch, and sometimes the campaign advertising gets ugly. But now an Anchorage lawmaker who is running for re-election himself says he's dismayed at the way outside political action groups are skirting state campaign finance laws. KSKA's Ellen Lockyer has more.
Representative Les Guerra, an Anchorage Democrat, says money coming from a national group is paying for attack ads against certain Democratic candidates, but that the people funding the ads are not disclosing their top donors.
This is a D.C.-based group. It's funded by outside corporations, including foreign corporations. And what they've arranged a very cute way to avoid Alaska law so that on TV when their ads run or in mail when their ads show up or on the radio, they don't have to say who their contributors are.
Guerra is referring to the admission by directors of the Republican State Leadership Committee that the group plans to spend money in Alaska on advertising aimed at unseating four Alaska Democratic candidates. Guerra says instead of buying advertisements themselves, the RSLC is funneling money through local organizations like the Accountability Project, or TAP. 3 years ago, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that political action groups could contribute unlimited funds to attempt to influence elections. Guerra said he and Senator Hollis French worked on a state law that would require donor identification in Alaska.
Senator French and I and others worked on a law that said when these outside groups come in and they spend corporate money on elections, they have to tell the public who's funding them, their top three contributors. And the top contributors for this group, the top contributors are Pfizer Pharmaceuticals, the right-wing Koch brothers from Texas who own coal companies, Exxon, drug companies, insurance companies. They have millions of dollars that they're spending, and it's all outside money.
RSLC top donors are ExxonMobil, Pfizer, AstraZeneca, and Koch Industries. RSLC also received more than $2 million from insurance company Blue Cross Blue Shield. Guerra says at least one attack ad paid for with RSLC money has appeared in print. Alaska Republican Party Chair Randy Redrick said recently that the RSLC has no connection whatsoever with the state Republican Party.
It has nothing to do with the Alaska Republican Party or the RNC. They are an independent group that operates in many, many states in the union, and I still have not seen an ad that they have placed here.
Since then, at least one ad has appeared listing RSLC as a top donor. But Redrick says ads funded with money from RSLC aren't having much of an impact.
I think the impact of their late entrance is negligible. Many voters have already voted absentee. Others have done early votes prior to them entering the marketplace. And I view their presence as more misguiding than helpful because it's given organized labor an opportunity to discredit things that did not ever occur.
Guerra says an ad paid for by RSLC is backing Republican Bob Roses, who is running against incumbent Bill Wilikowski for Senate District G. Alaska Public Offices Commission's Amanda McDonald confirms that political advertisers must declare their three top donors, and they must register with the APOC. McDonald says RSLC has registered with the APOC, but its final report this month shows zero contributions and zero expenditures. McDonald says if the RSLC contributes to a local Alaska political advocacy group, the local group must declare RSLC as a contributor. Also, McDonald says local political groups must get 90% of their donations from within Alaska. In essence, RSLC is not doing anything illegal, but Guerra still has concerns.
It's a very close question whether they're breaking the law. They're certainly violating the spirit. When we passed this law, we wanted the public to know who was behind these corporate ads.
RSLC officials did not return calls as to exactly how much money they have earmarked for Alaska political ads. According to RSLC's own website, the group has raised $38 million over the course of the 2011-2012 elections and spent $22 million of that this year. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
Federal prosecutors say former Alaska Eskimo Whaling Commission Director Maggie Amawak stole more than $420,000. Her lawyers say that figure is too high. What both sides agree on is that determining how much money was siphoned off and where it went is turning out to be a complicated affair. Amawak pleaded guilty in May to stealing commission funds and is being sentenced in federal court in Anchorage. The Anchorage Daily News says lawyers are arguing about just how much money she spent on herself, including money for gambling, snow machines, and a luxury Hummer SUV. Amawak's attorney says some of the money went to repaying whaling commissioners for legitimate expenses, but prosecutors contend she steered money to herself, family members, and in some cases, the commissioners. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a new fund to continue the fight for education causes in the state.
There's been over $1.5 billion spent on school construction across rural Alaska, so it made a huge difference.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Bristol Bay Native Corporation, generations of jobs, heritage, and history. Bristol Bay, a place that's always been. Online at bbnc.net. And by Condor Airlines, with connecting flights from Barrow, Bethel, Juneau, Kodiak, Nome, and Prudhoe Bay to Anchorage on Alaska Airlines, and continuing nonstop service to Frankfurt. Details at condor.com.
Senate District J, which represents West Anchorage and Sand Lake, is one of the most contentious races in the upcoming election. Because of redistricting, the Spinard part of the district shrank, while the Sand Lake and Jewel Lake neighborhoods were added. Republican businessman Bob Bell is challenging longtime Democratic Senator Hollis French for the seat. KSKA's Daisha Eaton has the story.
Hollis French has been a fixture in Juneau for a decade, but he says there's a lot more work for him to do, and if voters send him back to Juneau, he'll focus on two issues, energy and education.
My energy plan has three important components. One, maintain a strong North Slope oil industry. Number two, keep a stable supply of natural gas coming to our homes from Cook Inlet. Number three, for the long term, invest in renewable energy projects.
French, who came to Alaska to work on a Cook Inlet oil rig, then alternated working on the North Slope while finishing his college degree, eventually earned a law degree from Cornell and became a prosecuting attorney in Anchorage. He says Alaska's education system needs improvement, especially pre-kindergarten programs, which he's had a chance to push for as a member of the Education Committee. French helped found the Senate Bipartisan Coalition and currently chairs the Senate Judiciary Committee. Bob Bell has an engineering degree and is a Vietnam veteran. He founded the engineering and surveying firm F. Robert Bell & Associates, and he served on the Anchorage Assembly for 6 years. He says his experience running a business and working in municipal politics has prepared him to serve in the legislature.
I've always been of the philosophy that somebody should succeed at what they do before they run for office. And I think I fit that category now. I've run a business here in Anchorage for 38 years. We've employed up to 200 employees. I've handed paychecks to over 1,000 Alaskans.
Bell says the business world has taught him to negotiate, and that'll be useful when dealing with oil companies, government employees, and the public. Bell does not support the bipartisan coalition, which he says takes compromise too far and puts the legislature in gridlock on controversial issues such as coastal zone management, Denali Kid Care, and oil tax reform.
That coalition is weaker, and therefore anybody that doesn't like something, a very few senators, can kill it. And what happened was significant issues that should have come before the Senate didn't.
Bell says there are other ways to work across party lines. French is 100% behind the Senate Bipartisan Coalition, which he helped set up in 2006. He says when legislators founded the coalition, they knew they would have to tackle things that they could agree on.
Like education, like savings, like building Alaska. And we'd have to set aside the extreme agendas of each party. Frankly, my constituents don't want me to go down there and work solely as a Democrat. They send me down there to work across party lines and get things done. And I think we've been very successful.
French is not a fan of Governor Sean Parnell's oil tax plan, but he supports targeted tax cuts to encourage new development on the North Slope. Bell admits Parnell's plan wasn't perfect, but believes it's a good starting point. You can't talk about this race without talking about the Alaska Public Offices Commission, or APOC. In October, APOC fined Bell $390 for violating public official financial disclosure reporting law. One of the clients Bell did not originally disclose was British Petroleum, which paid his company more than $1 million in 2011. Bell says it was just a misunderstanding.
I didn't drag my feet to disclose my clients. When we called APOC, when I filed, they said I didn't need to give them the list because I didn't own the company anymore. So we didn't. They called us back in and said the rules changed, so now you do, and we immediately gave them the list.
Recently, French had his own brush with APOC. A Republican activist filed a complaint against him, saying he was collaborating with the Putting Alaskans First Committee and requested an expedited hearing. According to documents, the expedited hearing was denied because, based on the evidence presented, there was not reasonable cause to believe a violation of the campaign finance laws had occurred or will occur. French calls the accusation a political stunt. As of filing this story, French had raised about $226,000 and had around $30,000 left in his campaign account. Bell had raised about $150,000 and had close to $20,000 left to spend before Election Day. Both candidates have benefited from interest group ad campaigns. In Anchorage, I'm Daisha Eaton.
This evening, Citizens for the Educational Advancement of Alaska's Children, or SEAC, will acknowledge the settlement of two education lawsuits against the state with a presentation of two funds. One for $18 million will help pay for new programs for struggling schools, and another for $300,000. The smaller fund will be named the Howard S. Trickey Constitutional Defense Fund after the attorney who fought both the Casile and Moore versus the State of Alaska cases in the 1990s. The first case dealt with the lack of new school construction in rural Alaska, and the second went after the need for rural teachers and programs. Norman Eck is the superintendent of the Northwest Arctic Borough School District based in Kotzebue and president of SEAC. He says the cases had enormous impact.
So since then, in the last 10 years, or more than 10 years now, 12 years, there's been over $1.5 billion spent on school construction across rural Alaska. So it made a huge difference. And so, but it was never, the case was never completely settled. So just a little over a year ago, through Governor Parnell and the new education commissioner, Michael Hanley, we were able to work out a settlement with the state.
There was a second lawsuit, Moore versus the state. How did the two cases differ or compare?
Moore was more about adequacy of educational programs, whereas Casile was concerning facilities. And the Moore case has provided $18 million to improve educational programs in the 40 lowest performing schools in the state. And that's with those 40 schools are within 9 different school districts.
Tonight, in addition to announcing the creation of the fund, you'll be naming at least part of it for Howard Trickey, the attorney who fought the cases. It may seem unusual to some that you'd name an education defense fund after an attorney. Why is Mr. Trickey being honored in this way?
He fought in this way when no one else would stand up. He wouldn't let the cases die. Almost anyone else would have said, I've got work to do. I can't afford to do this. And there were many years where I'm sure he was working with no income from these cases, and sometimes with a heavy load of work on his part. And so he stuck through it, and that takes a remarkable person to be able to do that.
There is a lot of interest in some political arenas in the idea of using public funds to pay for private school education, the school voucher idea. As someone committed to educating Alaska kids, what do you think about that concept?
What I've noticed with vouchers in other states is that, let's say, take a state where it's an average of $8,000 to educate a student, and they'll put out a voucher that's worth $3,000. Well, where's the difference come from? No school can take this up without a fair amount of money to be able to educate the students. So we also see that as a way to bleed off money from public education And then where do you get the money to take care of all the legal requirements for special ed students? Because a lot of times the services that are required by law for special ed students can easily cost a school district $50, $80, $100, $120,000 a year just for one child. Education can be expensive in certain circumstances. And so the voucher schools that just run off of vouchers may very well then ignore these other students and not provide opportunities for them.
Norman Eck is the president of Citizens for the Educational Advancement of Alaska's Children and superintendent of the Northwest Arctic School District.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by First National Bank Alaska, helping Alaska's dreams grow since 1922. On the web at fnbalaska.com, an equal housing lender, member FDIC. When working near moving vehicles or equipment, wear high visibility vests. Being seen is critical to worker safety in a construction zone. High visibility clothing helps others see you. Employers, for no-cost safety and health consultation and training services, call Alaska Occupational Safety and Health at 1-800-656-4972. This message is sponsored by Alaska Labor Standards and Safety.
A fire in downtown Talkeetna early this morning burned two buildings to the ground and caused extensive damage to a third. The Talkeetna Fire Department responded to a blaze just after 2 a.m. that had consumed the My Little Dumpling food trailer and was spreading to adjacent structures, including Denali Dry Goods, built in 1930, and the Denali Zipline Tours building. According to Talkeetna Fire Chief Ken Farina, the three structures were ablaze when they responded, at which point units from as far as Willow and Central Matsu Fire were called in to assist in fighting the blaze and prevent it from spreading to other structures.
When we got there, there was a lot of fire. There, all three buildings were on fire. The back end of Denali Dry Goods and the Zipline building were on fire, and then extended up into the attics of both businesses. We had Willow come up, and actually everybody all the way down to the Central and Wasilla came on up.
Initial fire response took about 2 hours to knock the fire down, and response units concluded their efforts at around 8:30 a.m. once the hot spots were eliminated. Farina says the efforts to contain the fire and prevent its spread was a priority due to the close proximity of buildings in downtown Talkeetna, which are primarily wood. Fire marshals are conducting investigations into the cause of the fire, and total damage is still unknown at this time. British Columbia environmental officials have approved a new route to the Tulsacua Chief Mine that avoids several traditional native use areas and eliminates the need for Taku River barging. A Canadian company hopes to reopen the old mine by 2015. KTOO's Rosemary Alexander has the latest on the Tulsacua Mine, which sits at the headwaters of the salmon-rich Taku River.
The Taku River Tlingit First Nation has steadfastly opposed a road from Atlin to the mine, which is located near the confluence of the Tulsacua and Taku Rivers. The new route, however, grew out of discussions last year between mine owner Chieftain Metals and the tribe. Gary Alexander is project director for the Environmental Assessment Office for BC Ministry of Environment. He said the fact the two sides worked together was important.
The proponent, in this case Chieftain Metals, have an existing approval under the Environmental Assessment Act, as well as a permit to actually build the road. Now, on the basis that this wasn't the alternative that First Nation wanted, the proponent worked with the First Nation last year to come up with an alternative route that would better meet the needs of the First Nation and the proponent.
The new route is also within the Atlin Taku Land Use Plan, agreed to in 2011 by the First Nation and British Columbia government. The plan came after years of litigation, including a lawsuit over the original permit for a mine access road. When Chieftain Metals purchased the property 2 years ago, company officials knew the route was contentious, but they maintained that a road would be the only way to attract mine investors, especially since barging on the Taku River is so uncertain. The Taku River Watershed Agreement presented an opportunity for Chieftain and the First Nation to negotiate a better route. Keith Boyle is Chief Operating Officer for Chieftain Metals.
So they signed a land use plan and said, you know what, find an alternate route within this particular area if you want access to the Tolsuqua Valley. I'm simplifying it. And so that's the work we did all last year to actually come up with an alternate route that avoided those contentious issues and stayed within that strategic access area.
In an interview just before the company applied for the new route last spring, Boyle said it would be better for both the First Nation and Chieftain.
It avoids the Nackinac Trail, the heritage trail that the TRT have said has always been, you know, the biggest contention around that road. And the other thing, too, is it actually avoids what they call the Blue Cannon area, which is the area where there's a lot of moose and caribou.
The EAO's Alexander said the prospect of less impact on habitat for grizzly bear, caribou, and moose, the majority of wildlife species in the area, was a selling point for the new route. He also said it avoids a lot of potential impact for fish habitat.
There are significantly fewer bridge crossings on the amendment than there are on the approved route. It's quite a significant change in the number of crossings alone.
Since the BC government approved the new access route, First Nation leaders have had no comment. Calls to tribal leaders have not been returned. Southeast Alaskans should be relieved at the prospect of a road instead of barging materials and ore up and down the Taku River. But transportation is just one aspect of the proposed mine. The international group Rivers Without Borders may be the most vocal mine opponent. Spokesman Chris Zimmer said the access road would provide a foot in the door for more industrialization.
You know, the road versus the barge, I think they'd all have different impacts. I think the biggest worry from the road is the fact that once you put a major road into an area like this, you're likely to see additional spin-off industrial development.
Zimmer believes both transportation routes would be a problem for the Taku River watershed. The river flows from British Columbia into Alaska waters about 10 miles south of Juneau. The Taku River is considered Southeast Alaska's most prolific salmon producer. In Juneau, I'm Rosemarie Alexander.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Ellen Lockyer and Daisha Eaton in Anchorage, Lorian Nettleton in Talkeetna, and Rosemarie Alexander in Juneau. Our editor and producer is Annie Fite. Our audio engineer is Kristen Spack. Josh Edge is our web producer. And I'm Laurie Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by Crowley, providing tanker escorts, fuel delivery, and energy support services to Alaskans for nearly 60 years. From Valdez to the North Slope, Crowley knows Alaska. CrowleyAlaska.com. Winter in Alaska can be tough on children and adults with asthma. Cold air and smoke from wood stoves is hard on the lungs. More time is spent indoors with dust, and colds and flus are common. Take care of yourself and loved ones with asthma during these colder months. Get a flu shot. Talk to your health care provider about asthma management, take daily medication, and know what can make asthma worse. For more information, visit asthmainalaska.org or call 1-800-LUNG-USA. This message sponsored by the American Lung Association.
Increasing energy efficiency is an easy way to reduce energy consumption and save money. The Alaska Housing Finance Corporation now offers financing to publicly owned facilities to make improvements to increase energy efficiency. Find out more about how their loan program works and if there are public buildings in your community that are a good fit for the Alaska Energy Efficiency Revolving Loan Program at ahfc.us. This message sponsored by AHFC.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.